Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC, is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other. And therefore, ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to episode 40 of The Brainstorm. Compliance tells me we're only allowed to say that we expect one of these things to go to the moon, and that's Starship, so we'll be talking about that later. But we're excited to talk about Ethereum first with our newest associate on the crypto team, Lorenzo Valente. Lorenzo, maybe a quick intro on your background, and then we can dive into the Deng Kun update and what it means.
Yeah, sure. Hey, everyone, and happy to be here in my first episode. So I come from a mechanical engineering background. I started my own OTC desk, own startup. I did that for a year and a half, more or less. And then I joined a crypto investment fund focused on long tail of assets and trading. I worked for two other blockchain startups, one on Ethereum and the other one on Solana. And yeah, very happy to be one of the new research associates and working the digital asset team now.
Well, so you've got the Ethereum and Solana experience. I'm sure we'll dive into that because I feel like, you know, those two fanatics user bases on Twitter going at it. But maybe we just start off with the Deng Kun update and what it was, why it's so important.
Maybe sure.
Just high level takeaways. Yeah.
Sure. So it was last Wednesday, the Deng Kun update went live, or EIP 4844 also, or Proto Deng Sharding, which has a few weird names. So this was a very important technical upgrade for the Ethereum network, more than a monetary one, and especially regarding layer two scaling solutions. So layer twos, just to set the stage, they're the main scaling solutions for Ethereum. They are small blockchains that live on top of Ethereum. They inherit most of Ethereum's security, but they're cheaper to use. And so these projects started 4 or 5 years ago, and they're part of the broader Ethereum strategy to scale the blockchain. And so the Deng Kun upgrade was particularly important for these layer twos because they did decrease the transaction costs for users transaction on these layer twos. I don't know how if you want me to delve a bit into the technical, the most important thing is a throughput increase and the cost decrease for users on these layer twos. So hopefully, this is the first stage of a very broad and long Ethereum scaling roadmap. So there will be other two stages, hopefully in the next 2 or 3 years. And the final stage is called Deng sharding, which will happen in 2, 3, 4 years, maybe. So yeah, that's the overview.
Lorenzo, one, welcome to the show. Welcome to ARK. It's a pleasure to have you. When you think, maybe just help the listeners and viewers understand why the layer two ecosystem is so important to Ethereum scaling. And then also if you can compare that to a blockchain like Solana, which is, you know, already has high throughput and lower fees associated with it. If you could, you know, compare and contrast the two, and then just also set up how, you know, why the layer two is so important to Ethereum.
Sure. Yeah, it's a really good question. So one of the, I guess in these distributed systems, it really depends what trade-offs you want to make, right? When you construct a blockchain. And so one of the trade-offs that Ethereum is not willing to make at all is increasing the hardware requirements for nodes on the blockchain, right? So nodes, they have to store and compute every transaction on the blockchain. There are these copies of the blockchain around the world. And so this upgrade and the whole scaling roadmap of Ethereum is based on the fact that they want to keep the hardware requirements for node low, right? So this is a very important fact. Other VMs, so virtual machines and blockchains, such as Solana, you mentioned, but also Sui and Aptos, they're willing to make a different set of trade-offs. And so if you think kind of the two scaling approaches, Ethereum is more by microservices. So unbundling the core functions of the blockchain, optimizing them, and just relying on other projects to improve them, right? And then on the other hand, you have we call them the high performance chain, so Solana, Sui, and Aptos. And they're willing to make another set of trade-offs and scale more via Moore's law. And so they rely on chips getting less expensive and more performant. And so the nodes will be able to use these chips, and they will be able to scale the base layer by having more throughput and less latency. So these are kind of the two scaling approaches right now in the blockchain world.
That's interesting.
Do you think one is better than the other? Or you think like end state, all of these are kind of just competing and users accept whatever trade-offs? Or do you think that this is more of a divergent path and one set of trade-offs wins out?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think, there are definitely two different communities, right? And two philosophies behind it. I think you're already seeing both scaling solutions, joining, making trade-offs. For example, there are a couple of projects that are raising right now that are using some parts of the SVM, so the Solana virtual machine, but also using parts of the Ethereum virtual machine. So they're doing a bit of mix and match of things that are good on one chain, but can, they could also take advantage of some optimizations on the other chain. So we don't have the answer right now. I do think overall Ethereum will try to scale the base layer also, and I think within this scaling roadmap there are efforts to do that. And I think at some point also Solana will have to scale, with other techniques and more, something more like Ethereum with either rollups or other scaling solutions. So we'll see. But for now, it's definitely the two philosophies, two communities, and two approaches to scaling.
But the important thing for the end user, like Nick, is you won't be paying $400 on gas fees when you're buying crypto NFTs.
You won't, unless you're transacting on Ethereum layer one. But yeah, if you're on layer twos, which you should be at this point, it will be cheaper. So this is good news.
Terrific. And then maybe just the last, I feel like that's a good high level takeaway. Just the last minute or so, take us into the weeds for the people who want to hear it. What was the technical side of this upgrade?
Yeah, so EIP-4844 or Denkun introduces a new type of data storage. I mean, they introduce blobs. So basically, you can think of blobs as large data packets that set the stage for a different storage technique. So up to now, rollups had to post call data to the Ethereum layer one, which was very expensive because it needed to be stored and computed by every node on the network. And so blobs will be a more efficient type of storage and transient. So after, I think right now it's 18 days, but it's still up for discussion. So between 18 and 30 days, it will be pruned of the blockchain, so that it will be erased, and essentially that will make storage more efficient and cheaper. So that's kind of the technical take.
Isn't the, I guess, one of the reasons that blockchain is so attractive is that everything is stored and you can go back and verify. So how can you help me understand when you say delete or, it's erased? How does that fit into the blockchain narrative that at least I have in my mind, which is you can always go back and verify a transaction took place, even if it's, a decade ago?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you're right. For rollups in particular, so there are two solutions. 20 to 30 days is enough time for an honest actor to basically retrieve the information and make sure it was correctly computed and stored. And so for the layer two solutions, this is an acceptable trade-off. And it gives enough guarantees for users and in general, other applications. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Nick, like the final stage of this scaling roadmap, which is Dank sharding, will be to break the blockchain into smaller pieces. And so every node won't have to compute and store everything on the blockchain. They will just have to do it for a small part, and then they will give enough guarantees to the other nodes, so you'll be able to reconstruct the blockchain and basically guaranteeing that they're acting that kind of truthfully. So, but you're right. I mean, you're right. The question, is fair, and I think it's just the trade-offs that the blockchain has to do to scale.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair.
Amazing. I've understood this much better the second time around listening to it and with these questions. So Lorenzo, thank you so much. This is super, super great and insightful.
Yeah. Thank you, Lorenzo.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks to you guys. It was a pleasure.
All right. I guess that brings us to the second topic, which is SpaceX's Starship, which could take us to the moon and beyond.
Sam, I did not watch. I'm guilty,
Nick,
of not watching.
History.
I missed history.
How are you not?
I'm
watching?
Going to go back, but I want you to describe it for me. Did it? What ended up happening to the ship? Did it blow up? Where is it? I know the last one they lost for a bit.
It was glorious, Nick. But I'll do my demo. You got Starship, which is the piece on top. You've got like the heavy booster, which is the piece underneath. It's essentially a 40-story skyscraper launching up into the atmosphere. So they successfully separated. So that's stage separation. The booster successfully turned its engines on, flew back. When it came to try and splash down, not all of the engines relit. And so it seems like it
took a beating.
Roughly, I think they said like 150 to 100 meters above the water or something like that. It separated. This piece, orbital velocity, super exciting, keeps going. In space, it demonstrated the various things that it was trying to demonstrate, which was kind of like a fueling capability, opening up its quote mouth so that it could, in theory, dispense satellites. It was supposed to relight its engine in orbit, which it did not. And then eventually, well, actually the other cool part, as it's coming back through the atmosphere, it had Starlink antennas on it. And so you could see like the plasma building up on it as it's coming through the atmosphere. And it also eventually disintegrated / blew up upon reentry. All in all, I'd say super, super successful test flight. Obviously, we want to get to the splashdowns, controlled splashdown stages. I think for us watching it, this is not a, okay, can Starship work? It's now a, when does it work, right? Like, it seems extremely compelling, the progress they're making. The other thing is, it seems like even with what they did this time, they could use it as an expendable rocket to put satellites into orbit. And I think that's okay. A huge, huge point, right? So it's like their next test flight. I think they're trying to fly it 6 times this year. They could try and use it to put something into orbit, whether that's some giant Starlink satellites or a Cybertruck. You know, they threw up the Roadster. It's very compelling. And then just on the math side of it, I'll pull up the numbers because Elon tweeted this out and I thought this was pretty impressive just alone. So he said that max payload in expendable mode is around 200 tons. And, you know, some people have estimated that the cost to build a Starship is $100 million. So if you take both of these as being correct, then the cost to space is $500 per kilogram, we'll say, to low Earth orbit. A reusable Falcon 9, we're estimating, is kind of just below $1,000. So just this magnitude of payload capability is leading to further cost declines here in expendable mode. So you can imagine when they do get this to reusable, this is how you get that order of magnitude drop in cost to space.
Why did they decide to do a controlled splashdown versus, I think in the past they've tried to land part of the ship. So are they just, you know, saying, okay, for right now, let's focus on a different part of the progress versus trying to re-land the booster? Or what was the decision there?
Yeah, I think it's incremental steps, which makes sense. If you do a gentle splashdown as your end goal and you have a hard splashdown, then you're making a big splash in the water, as opposed to if you're trying to land it onto the landing pad and it doesn't work out, you're demolishing extremely expensive hardware on the ground. Ultimately, like that, I think that will be an interesting step. Eventually, they're going to have to test it. And, you know, they've got kind of these like chopstick catchers on the landing. It wouldn't surprise me if they blow up one of those by accident, but it's iterative and eventually they will have to be able to land it on that.
And do we know, or do we have any insights on when the next launch will be and what, you know, the incremental steps to look for will be in the next launch?
Yeah. So given that they want to launch, I think it is, you know, high single digits this year, I'd imagine in the next few months, they'll try and launch another one. They've got a number of these built already. You know, they always go through, it's kind of incredible the amount of data they collect and are able to use to make improvements. So improvements on the rocket engines, probably on, you know, the various elements on the heating and things like that. And so they work hard. They work long hours over there. I'd imagine as soon as they can get regulatory approval, they're going to try and get back up there. What I said before, I think they'll try and put something into space with the next one and make it like a usable launch, right? Because they need to do these test flights anyway. So it's kind of, if you can use it for commercial purpose, that's like a free launch, essentially.
Well, they ultimately need to do a test with some sort of payload,
yeah,
right? So you might as well throw another vehicle into space if you're doing it. It's good marketing.
Yeah, why not? the Roadster needs company.
Right. Yeah. Is there a website to track the Roadster? I'm actually curious.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't checked it in a while. I do think maybe it wasn't underappreciated. It's just really mind-blowing is the video that was coming off of the rocket, the Starship. It was such high quality. It's going, you know, tens of thousands of miles an hour. It's going through the atmosphere and you're still getting high quality image. It opens your eyes to what the future of connectivity can look like. And, you know, if you get good service coming through the atmosphere, I'm sure you'll be fine in your remote work from home setup.
Yeah, I agree. The video quality, I think Elon posted a picture and said, "I can't believe this image is real," to your point, Sam, about the quality. And I'm committing to watching the next one because I need to, given I hung a photo of Starship over my bed, which took a lot of convincing with the wife. So I probably need to be more a part of this journey, or at least follow along. Otherwise, it would seem silly.
Yeah, I recommend, you know, if you've got kids, you should have them watch it too. This is exciting. We're going to the moon and beyond. It really is awe-inspiring.
Yeah, definitely. All right. I think that's our show. Sam, thank you. Lorenzo, thank you.
See everyone, see you next week.